You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
Hey, now live, and welcome to latest IG Live. We started doing these in March, and last March when, of course, the pandemic was on people's minds, and the economic lockdowns were starting, and it was really scary because the news, of course, and I mentioned this last time, but I'm bringing this up for a reason. The news kept saying all these crazy things about how scary the pandemic was. One newspaper source, I believe it was the New York Times, said there was going to be 140 million deaths. I mentioned this last time, and someone in the comments went crazy saying it was just, this person said, it was all the right-wing media lying and the left-wing media telling the truth. I don't care about right-wing or left-wing. I've been on CNBC and MSNBC. I've been on Fox. I've been on left-wing, right-wing, whatever you want to call it, whatever. First off, you need two wings to fly a plane. So it's not so bad if you're on both wings. I remember in the summer, just as an example, when this New York City is Dead article came out, I was on both left-wing and right-wing media, but everybody was criticizing me for being on media that leans towards the right. Is there like a party downstairs?
It's our neighbors.
Everybody has a party here all the time. What is it with parties all the time?
So people are having fun.
But anyway, someone commented that, oh, only the left-wing media tells the truth, the right-wing media always lies. And by the way, other people are commenting, only the right-wing media tells the truth and the left-wing media lie. Let me tell you something. They both lie. They are not in the business of telling you the truth. They are not in the business of selling you the truth. They're in the business of selling fear. And so our job, the reason we started doing these IG Lives, was to kind of try to look at both sides of a story. You always want to steel man an argument, which means you always want to argue the other side even stronger than the person who's arguing against you. So for instance, I'm against the economic lockdowns. I think the economic lockdowns have not really caused that much of a saving lives, but have also caused enormous collateral damage in terms of hunger, unemployment, people dying from other illnesses other than COVID, loneliness, which of course affects the immune system. And these economic lockdowns are ongoing. People's lives are being ruined. I would encourage anybody to just help out a little with charitable efforts, and you'll see how many people are actually suffering because of these economic lockdowns. And meanwhile, the amount of lives being saved from less COVID is almost zero. I feel like a year later, we're still talking about COVID, which is a drag. But I'm only going to do this for a few seconds. I just want to explain. Originally, the goals of the economic lockdowns was to flatten the curve. And then they, without telling us, they moved the goalposts. And they said, no. The goal of the economic lockdowns is to have zero COVID. That's never the goal. What are we going to do? Every time there's a disease, we're going to shut down the entire economy until there's a vaccine? That's ridiculous. When people had polio in the 1940s, my mom, for instance, had polio. She couldn't walk after that for a long time. And even now, it's hard for her. So they didn't shut down the economy. Maybe they would shut down the school for a few days. But every state's different. Every locality is different. Every variant of this virus is different. We're going to be living with this virus now for a long time with all the different variations. We're getting 140 million people now have gotten the vaccine. That's great. That leads to some sort of herd immunity, I hope, eventually. But now there's new variants. There's one in Pakistan. There's one in England. There's one in Brazil. Will the vaccines be good for those? Maybe yes, maybe no. We've talked to some epidemiologists. And you know what they said? They said, I don't know. And I wish the media would say, I don't know, a little bit more. But now, enough COVID. What I will say is that I don't know is a good response when people are talking and arguing. Too often, we get into conflict because one person believes X and the other person believes the opposite of X. And it's almost like we've lost the ability to have nuance in our lives, that it might not be so clear, the answer. And you will have a better life if you're willing to accept the fact, if every time you encounter people arguing or every time you encounter an important decision, if you're willing to accept the fact that a viable answer is, I don't know, what will happen is your brain will start to switch from being sure about something to actually being curious about something and wanting to learn more and wanting to learn the nuances. Because I don't know is a much harder answer than, oh yes, well, of course, nobody should ever have, of course, nobody should ever do this again. Nobody should ever take heroin again. Or no one should ever have a gun in their house again. Or no one should ever have an abortion again. People are so firm on no one should ever go to war again, which is something I'm guilty of saying. No one should ever go to college again, something I'm guilty of saying. I should say, I don't really know, that there are nuances. Now, that's not as interesting. I remember once being told by CNBC that If you never want to get invited back to CNBC, say the words, I don't know. They don't like it when people say, I don't know. But a good investor, which is what CNBC features, will always say, I don't know. Warren Buffett probably has said, I don't know, more than any other investor in history, and he's the best investor in history. So, what don't you know?
A lot.
Like, for instance, take guns, for instance. Like, I will never own a gun. And there's no reason for me to own a gun. What am I going to do? If someone robs his house, am I going to shoot them and kill them? Like, I would never do that.
That's not the only reason why you have a gun. Some people use them, for sports when they go clay shooting or...
Right, okay, but that's... You could also usually rent a gun at the place. But usually the argument for guns is, like, someone will go to Texas and say, you know why there's no crime in Texas? Because everyone in Texas carries a gun. And so there's this sort of anti-crime aspect of having guns. And now we've recently, though, had a couple of different shootings, and, the shooter
bought a gun legally. And so then the first instinct is, well, let's just make it illegal, and then he can't buy a gun. But try to find, now that sounds reasonable. Okay, if it was illegal, maybe he wouldn't have bought a gun. But try to find the I don't know in every situation. So for instance, let's say, you know, we have four daughters. What's a time when we might have said, I don't know? Or what's the time when maybe we should have said, I don't know, to a daughter?
When we want them to make their own choices, maybe. Their own choices, and let them have their own consequences. Sometimes I just...
Yep, that's a little louder. But
sometimes I say that to them. Even if I do know, I say, I don't know. I want you to make that decision.
Yeah, like let's say, this is a hypothetical, this is not happening, but let's say you have a daughter and she has a boyfriend and she wants the boyfriend to sleep over the house. Do you know the answer, or would you say, what would you say?
Well, it depends on how old she is.
Let's say she's 20.
Okay, well, they...
And you know that they're going to have sex.
Well, her boyfriend can stay over, but I do not want them in the same room.
Because you're afraid they'll have sex, or...
Well, it just, I don't know, it just doesn't seem appropriate.
Okay, so for you it doesn't seem appropriate. For, let's say, this hypothetical daughter, this did not actually happen. Yeah. It might be something they want to do, and then they could argue, hey, would you rather us in a car or in some, you know, other dangerous, more less safe situation, less comfortable situation? And the answer is, I honestly don't know. I could have an opinion, but...
Yeah, that's right. It's an opinion.
Right.
So, yeah. Right. I mean, after she's 21, I mean, she's really an adult. Well, 18, she's an adult, but...
Let me ask you a question.
I don't know.
Right. And let me ask you a question. I'm asking this for anybody here. Like, hit a like or something if this applies to you. How many of you in the past year, since March of 2020, how many have maybe lost friends or close connections, or maybe a close connection got a little worse because you shared different opinions? Hit a like. I mean, right now I'm not seeing any likes, but I agree. Robert, parents must guide their kids. But what's the I'll ask you, Robert. What's a situation where, of course, parents should guide their kids, but should you 100% of the time, do you know everything that's good for your kids? My parents did not know everything that was good for me. I probably don't know, even though I think I know everything that's good for my kids, I probably don't know everything that's good for my kids. Like, none of us are perfect parents. We have an argument all the time. And this is describing in detail an argument that Robin and I have had for 2 years. You're pretty firm about kids should make their own way in the world. And that's a very simplistic way of describing your stance.
Well, they should work.
They should work. And I believe that too. I'm not disagreeing. But I sometimes think parents need... I feel like I didn't have anything growing up. And I was in a lot of pain all the time. I was going broke. And it was, you know, sometimes I don't want my kids to go through the pain that I went through. So I want them to know that they're always going to be safe. As much as I'm safe, they're going to be safe in terms of like money and things like that.
But that's not helping them.
Okay, so tell me your opinion.
Well, I mean,
because I'm going to admit, I don't know the answer.
Know that you're there because you can be there for them emotionally. And they know they can come to you for anything, but by enabling them and giving them money, why would they want to work? Like, they've got to feel that sort of pain in the sense that if they want something, they need to work for it. So why give them money? Because I think that's really hurting the kids, and it's going to hurt you down the road, because if they don't learn this now, then it's going to be harder for them to learn it later. So it's sort of like the tough love. Of course, we all want to give our kids whatever they want. But you know that that is just not healthy. They've got to feel that, you know, that trigger that, you know, want or that survival mode so that they can actually survive like we did. So, like you and me, my parents are giving me money. And you are your experiences. So
right.
It's okay to go through pain, but that's growth.
Right. So I agree, but I just remember times when I was, you know, There was a like starting around 2001, 2002, 2000 or 2001 was the first time I went really broke. And I had two kids. In 2002, my second kid was born. I had two kids. I was losing my home. There was a point when I literally couldn't afford diapers for my kids. Okay. And all I'm saying is I'm afraid. I felt so scared and so depressed and even suicidal. I can't even picture my beautiful little children. Like, now they're not so little anymore, but I can't even picture them going through that kind of fear.
But that's at a different level, though, really. Mm-hmm. That's a different level. You were an adult in your 30s. You had two kids. You were married. You had been working. You know, yes, and there's certain circumstances that, yes, a parent, if you can afford it, okay, you can help the kid out and they can pay you back. But I'm talking about raising kids when they are able to work at 16, 17, 18. You're preparing them so that they can survive in a situation like that because they've gone through that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So
you want to prepare your kids for life. You want to prepare them to be out in the world. We're not always going to be here. So we want them to be strong. And the way to do it is to teach them while they're young. And then they grow up stronger and stronger.
So let me ask you a question, which I don't know the answer to. Somebody requested to be in the video. Let me ask you a question, which I don't know the answer of. Let's say you have a lot of money when you die. Do you leave them your money in your will? Let's say they're 30 years old.
Well, I think that if you have a lot of money, you can set it up for as a charity or something and then have them work for the charity. They can actually work for the money. But I think that giving kids just a chunk of money is insane. But that's just my opinion.
Well, it's an opinion which Warren Buffett agrees with you on, although he has his own way of... Every time Warren Buffett gives a reason for something, there's always a good reason and a real reason. So he'll give the same reason you did about he's giving his kids nothing in his will. But the real thing he's doing is he set up a $3 billion charity for each kid. So they're allowed to take up to $90 million a year salary, which I guess for him is equivalent to nothing. But all I'm saying is it's very important that people say, I don't know. Because it's very rare that there's two sides to an issue. There's more like 10 sides to every issue. For instance, pro-life or pro-choice. A lot of it, for some people, it depends on religion. For some people, of course, it's a woman's right to choose no matter what. For some people, particularly on the religious side, it depends on when does consciousness develop? When is this a living being? Is it at inception? Is it when a certain stage is reached? And there's a lot of noise over there.
Lots of parties.
And what kind of party is over there?
Maybe a Passover party?
No, not a Passover party. Passover is like more of a somber thing. But
they survived the Passover.
I also want to tell a story. Next week, what day is it today? March 26th. Next week, in a few days, March 31st, I'm releasing a brand new book. Not Skip the Line, which I released last month, but this one's called We Got Answers. And it's a project... I did with Charlemagne the God, he's been on my podcast, but he's a big radio host. He hosts a TV show, a morning TV show, a radio show called The Breakfast Club. It's got 10 million listeners a day, something like that. And this is a very important example of, you know, as you know, I write down 10 ideas a day. So I write them down every day in a waiter's pad like this. Here's some ideas. And I write them in a waiter's pad every day. And then sometimes I share my ideas with other people. And people ask me, aren't you afraid people will steal your ideas? And the answer is no. I'm not afraid people will steal my ideas. Because let's say someone steals an idea. That means my idea was a good one. So I like to know that people have validated my ideas. That means I'm an idea machine. And the other thing is, it's very important to have an abundance mindset instead of a scarcity mindset. If you're worried that someone's going to steal your idea, that's the same thing as saying, I'm only going to have one shot. I'm only going to have one idea. It's like that Eminem song. I'm only going to have one shot at success. But the reality is if you have an abundance mindset, you have many, many shots at success. And sharing ideas is the way to actually get opportunities. So I want to describe this book project happened, and this might be the best-selling book of the year for all I know. Like, Audible is putting their full weight behind this book. It's going to be all over the front page of Audible and Amazon, and they're going to spend probably millions of dollars on the marketing. And here's how this project started. Charlemagne, if you remember, did an interview with Joe Biden. And in the interview, Joe Biden had to go. And Charlemagne said, hey, we have more questions. And Biden famously said, listen, if you haven't decided between me and Trump by now, then you ain't black. And, you know, Biden had to apologize for that. No harm, no foul. But that line, when Charlemagne said, we have questions, that made me think, that sounds like a book title. And so I wrote to Charlemagne, who I vaguely knew, he'd been on the podcast once. I wrote to Charlemagne and I said, hey, you should write a book called We Have Questions. And my idea list for that day was 10 questions I would ask if I was Charlemagne. And Charlemagne wrote back. And so people would say to me, why didn't you write that book? Or why did you share? That would have been a good book for me to write. But I'm always interested. I can't do every idea I have. Otherwise, that's 3,000 ideas a year or more. Because I write 10 ideas a day. Although, to be honest, a little lately, I've been burnt out. I haven't been writing as many ideas down for the first time in 20 years. But I didn't want to write the book. And so I wrote to Charlemagne and I said, this is a great book for you. You don't need me to write it. You should just write it. This is a good book for you. I have nothing to do with this. I was just interested for you. And, you know, if Charlemagne comes on the podcast, which he probably will, to discuss this, we'll go over the story maybe again, and also what we learned from doing this project. But anyway, Charlemagne said, look, help me outline it a little bit more. So I did. I always am eager to help. And so I outlined the idea a little bit more. He pitched it to Amazon. I helped him pitch it to Amazon. Amazon loved it. Audible in particular, which is owned by Amazon. And they wanted Charlemagne to do this as an audiobook where a white person, me, asks questions that I've always wanted to ask about racism and Black Lives Matter and all these things that I was afraid to ask because what would people think of me? I'll ask them to a bunch of African-American leaders, intellectuals, celebrities, whatever that Charlemagne would set up. So I said, fine, that's a great idea, great format. I don't need to be involved at all. And I already had a book coming out. I didn't need to have two books coming out. And more, though, I kept getting more and more involved. And eventually, now the book is the audiobook's by Charlemagne and me. And it's coming out in a few days. And it's going to be this huge book. And that's how sharing ideas can create these enormous, enormous opportunities. By the way, sometimes they don't create any opportunities. That's okay, too. The whole idea is you always want to share. Think about Google for a second. I've written about this. I wrote about this in Skip the Line, the Google technique. When you go to Google and say, hey, Google, can you please tell me about sexually transmitted diseases? Google says, listen, James, as much as we'd love to help you out, we don't know anything about sexually transmitted diseases. But here are 10, we've done the homework. Here are 10 websites that are the best websites you can go to find out about sexually transmitted diseases. And Google measures its success by how quickly you leave their website. They literally want to give you ideas and then never talk to you again. And then, but the next time I want to find out about, colleges or presidents or whatever, what does Joe Biden stand on taxes? Where do I go? I go back to Google and say, Google, I know you didn't know anything about STDs, but do you know anything about Joe Biden's taxes? And Google will say to me, listen, we don't know anything, but here's 10 sites describing the tax plan that Biden's proposing. And so then I'll go to those. And people think, okay, that's great for a business. Because that was their strategy, they created $1.5 trillion company. But guess what? If you do the same strategy yourself, you might not be worth $1.5 trillion, but using that exact approach, you'll be worth a tiny, tiny percentage of that, and a tiny, tiny percentage of $1.5 trillion is pretty good. So that's a great example of why you should always share value as much as you can, even if you think people are stealing your ideas, even if you think you're going to lose opportunities, you're actually going to get, Google gained more opportunities than any other company in the history of the world because of that.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. And then I started thinking, what can I learn? That's what I learned from Google, but what can I learn from other companies? So, for instance, Amazon. Let's take a look. I realized Amazon's a great company to learn from. Not that, oh, I should sell something online, but think about how Amazon scaled. First off, Amazon was a bookstore. Like Jeff Bezos was basically like your small-time bookseller. But then he said, oh, how about we'll scale this? And they started, they became not only a bookstore, but an electronics store, a clothing store, a food store, which I didn't even think you could sell clothes or food online, but Amazon did it. And then they said, how about we scale again? And they said, we have all this infrastructure for selling. How about we let other people use this infrastructure? So they created the Amazon Sellers Program. Now anybody could sell on Amazon. And then they scaled again. Well, we don't have to just sell books and electronics. We can also create TV shows. We're a very high-trafficked site. What is a TV channel now except a high-trafficked site? So they started selling TV shows. And then they scaled again. We have all this cloud infrastructure to do all these massive trillion data websites. Let's sell our entire infrastructure. So their most profitable part of their business now is Amazon Web Services. So from Amazon, you can learn that no matter what you do in life, you can scale. So for instance, I used to write articles about stocks, and then I scaled it. I wrote books about stocks, and then I scaled it. I wrote newsletters and courses about stocks, and even, you know, other things about stocks. So that's one way to scale a business.
Isn't that what Ethereum did? Like, they're using their platform for other cryptocurrencies to sort of branch out?
Yeah, so Ethereum basically started because first there was Bitcoin, and Bitcoin had this software layer called the Lightning Network, but it wasn't really that good. It was hard to program things on top of Bitcoin. Ethereum made it very easy to program things on top of the crypto infrastructure. So Ethereum basically became a scaled version of Bitcoin. And then other coins built on top of Ethereum, let's say Filecoin, for instance, built on top of Ethereum, I'm not totally sure, but they could scale to become different. They're like a decentralized Dropbox, but they could scale now to become decentralized other things.
Right.
So, you know, always think, whatever you're doing, you know, scale. So I was talking to someone the other day who had great ideas. So now I have two people. I'm doing this program called I Will Make You a Millionaire. Originally, I pitched this as a TV show and it was rejected everywhere because no one wanted to take the chance. So I'm doing it using the skip the line techniques for my book. I'm helping 12 different people make $1 million. And I'm going to document everything along the way and do Zoom calls. And so far, I've selected two people. I'm going to pick 12 ultimately. I've selected two people. The second one was started last week, Jason First. He had all these great ideas. He has all these great ideas about the restaurant industry. And then when I said, so what do you want to do with these ideas? He said, well, start a restaurant, of course. But in the book Skip the Line, I have a chapter called The Spoken Wheel Approach, where you have a wheel. In his case, it's restaurants. But owning a restaurant is just one spoke. And I said, well, you could take some of your ideas and make software products. You could take some of your ideas and do coaching or consulting. Some of your ideas, you could do a podcast or a newsletter. Some of your ideas, you could do, set up a chain of restaurants. Or again, make a software product to solve this staffing problem that restaurants have. And on and on. So he had never thought of it this way. It was only our first meeting, but we Zoomed it, and we were Zooming all of these, and we're gonna share this along the way as we do this,
that's great.
Yeah. So anybody, and by the way, I'm still picking the 12. If you, I hope everybody buys the Skip the Line book. I have a lot of 23 different techniques for how you can basically master anything you want. And then monetize it, which is the key. A lot of these self-help books talk about how to monetize things, but they don't tell how to get good at something. It's like they have this theory that you could be, you know, crap at anything, but still make money off of it. This is not true. That's like scammy. Or they teach you how to learn something, but it's no good if you're the best writer in the world, but you don't know the industry and you don't know how to monetize it. You have to learn the skills and you have to learn the field. Oh, thanks. Tashiana, you're reading the book and it's amazing. Karen Abroad, you said you literally stopped reading the book just now to join this IG Live. Thank you very much.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a three-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a three-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
So, I want to answer some questions, or we both want to answer some questions and ask away, or...
I have a question.
Yes, ask a question. And then this person also has a question about NFT art. So we're going to do a whole episode on that next week, but go ahead.
No, I mean, I feel like, especially in our family, we're very creative and we come up with these great ideas. The hardest thing for me is execution.
Yes.
And I feel like, you know, people, I think a lot of creative people, a lot of great ideas, but then to find, you know, that, you know, like Procter and Gamble, you know, they worked well together. They, one was the creative, one was the executive. You
know? I did not know that. I should research Procter and Gamble.
I think so.
I never think of them. There was a Mr. Procter and a Mr. Gamble.
I think so.
Or did Procter just
know,
gamble?
Actually, but it sounds good. But at this point, I'm saying that, you know, finding a person or people to help you execute these great ideas, that's a whole nother thing. How do you find these people? You know, like, it's just, to
well, what's
me,
an example?
It's a package. Well, let's say you want to invent something. How do you find these companies that can actually build the prototype? Or how do you, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things that go along with that. It's easy to come up. It's not easy to come up with an idea. But when you have an idea, like, then what do? Like, where do you find these?
Okay, so several things. One is, remember I gave the Google technique, which is how to be a personal Google to create in your life a small percentage of the $1.5 trillion in value that Google has created. Well, now what if I wanted to be like a personal LinkedIn? So here's the secret about LinkedIn. When you need something, let's say you have 1,000 connections on LinkedIn. You could tell all your connections, hey, I need something. Can any of you guys do this? And the answer is no, usually. Like, they're busy doing things. But it turns out that you get, when people ask questions on LinkedIn, hey, can you guys help me with this? It's not their connections that help them. It's the connections of their connections. So the key is ask, first off, whenever anyone asks you, can you help me with something? The answer is not no. The answer is no, but
right.
Let me, as it seems, it's like the opposite of improv, like yes and is improv.
Uh-huh.
But no, but is the LinkedIn improv, which is, no, but I might know people who can do it. So.
Because I do that.
For instance, I, as you know, but I'll tell people here. So I, this whole entire past year, once we started doing all these Zoom calls, I felt like Zoom was not the best platform for podcasters. The video quality is low. The audio quality is low. The audio quality is only on one side. So if you have a bad internet connection, then I'm not going to hear part of the conversation. So Zoom is great for meetings, but it's not good for podcasts. But it's what's 700 million people use it now since the pandemic started, and it's used mostly for podcasts. And so I decided to create my own software where the audio is recorded locally on both sides, and there's still video, and there's some other features. Now, there was some competitors, but they were just doing audio only, like Squadcast and Zencastr. Now they're starting to do video, but it's problematic. And then I, using the Amazon approach, I scaled and made more and more and more features. So I haven't released it yet, but going to release soon. But here's to answer your question. I asked several friends of mine who were programmers, and most people on this, listening to this, have at least one or two friends who are computer programmers or have some LinkedIn connections or Facebook friends that are computer programmers. And so I asked my friends who were the best programmers, and I didn't say to them, hey, can you help me? Can you do this? Can you execute on this for me? I said, do you know anybody? I trust your advice. Can you advise me on someone who might be willing to do this? And they gave me, you know, these different people I asked gave me different choices, and I spoke to many people. And it was my connection of my connection that gave me the best possible choice. And so now there's one programmer, his name's Kelvin. This one programmer and I are working together on creating this. And then, by the way, our son, John, or your son, my stepson, John, is a programmer, so he's been helping as well. And so it's to be a personal LinkedIn, again, is a way to make money. Don't expect your connections to help you, but maybe your connections to connections. For instance, let's say I wanted to make a food product. I had an idea for a new kind of vegan fish. And I have a recipe, and I did the recipe in my kitchen. I had a party with all my friends and said, can you tell me if this is fish or not? And they couldn't figure it out, but they said it was excellent. And then I told them it's not fish, but it's tempeh with fish flavoring. I'm just making this up. And I packaged it as a burrito. Well, now what do? Well, if I sent out on my Facebook friends or LinkedIn connections, I would find one or two people in the food business, and I would probably talk to Bill Glazer, who helps run a company called Outstanding Foods, where they make vegan snacks. And I actually called him the other day and asked him this: how do you make food that's commercial? And there are commercially licensed factories, and you give them the recipe, they can make it batch, and they package it and everything, and then you upsell it to distributors. I mean, you mark it up for distributors. And that's how you would make something like that. So to execute was actually, the hard part was coming up with the idea. People say ideas are worth a dime a dozen and execution is everything. But the hard part was actually coming up with the recipe, maybe. I'm making this up. I didn't really come up with a recipe for a vegan fish. But the hard part would be coming up with the recipe. And then Bill Glazer could have told me exactly how he did it with Outstanding Foods and introduced me to the factory. And then I just send a recipe to them. I get their prices. And I find a distributor. I'll give you an example. This is actually a fascinating story from, I didn't even tell you this. I heard this just this week. And often I have a friend who, and I gotta be careful what I say here. He's a really good guy, but for years, I've known him for 20, 25 years. He's been a day trader. He didn't really make money. He went broke. He gambles a little bit. Maybe he had some substance abuse issues. I don't want to call him out too much. And often his wife actually listens to these IG lives. And he always was struggling with money, and he was always a little bit scared. Well, about a year ago, when the pandemic started, he figured, oh, okay, I could sell these PPE, the personal protection equipment, like masks, gloves, surgical gowns. And he said, oh, that's going to be a hot area. And then he randomly started calling hospitals. So he called me, and he called a friend of mine, and he said, hey, do either of you guys know somebody at, you know, the Cleveland Clinic or XYZ Hospital? And we said, no. And he's like, okay, no problem. And he hung up the phone, and he called other people. So my friend called 100 people and said, do you know anybody who works at a hospital who can buy masks? And so lesson number one, he knew I didn't have anything to do with any hospitals, but he still felt comfortable calling me and asking me if I knew somebody, if he had a friend of a friend, basically, who knew anybody who could make buying decisions at a major hospital. He called 100 people. He ended up with phone numbers for 7 hospitals, and they said, sure, we'll buy PPE equipment. And so he knew people who were making the plastic gloves and the masks, and they weren't anything special. And then he had friends of friends who knew people at hospitals, and so he got some orders going. And then he teamed up with some other people to make this a full company. The people at the hospitals joined forces with him. And no kidding, this is a guy who's never made serious money in his life. Last week, he closed on a $100 million deal where his portion after the profits is $19 million.
Wow.
So lesson number one, the friend of a friend of approach works. If you become a personal LinkedIn, you will make money. Lesson number two, a lot of people in his situation, including me, everybody knew last March and April that masks, gloves, gowns, equipment would be in need. But my thinking at that time was, well, who am I to supply gloves to a hospital? I don't know where the gloves are made, and I don't know how to get in touch with a hospital. So it's like what people say about the internet. Oh, it's too late to start an internet company. I thought to myself, it's too late to start a PPE company. So my friend, he could have thought the same thing. It's too late to start a PPE company. But It doesn't hurt to just make some phone calls. It doesn't hurt to see, hey, do you want to buy some plastic gloves? I know you're already buying it from, you know, Procter & Gamble, but maybe you could buy it from me a little cheaper. So it doesn't hurt to ask. But the big lesson there, lesson number two is, it's never too late. No matter what industry you're in, it is never too late to start a business in that industry. You don't know anything about AI and robotics, and you want to start an AI and robotics company? No problem. Within a few weeks, you could learn enough about AI and robotics to be in the top 1% of the field. Not the top 10, but the top 1%. And then, if you have a product, don't even start a business unless you have a customer. That's an important lesson number three here. Don't even start a business unless you have a customer. You have to have a customer before you start a business. Too many people say, oh, if you build it, they will come. That only worked in the movie Field of Dreams because God was involved. If you build it, they will not come is the actual truth. So he basically found a way to get plastic gloves and masks. He used the personal LinkedIn technique to find a bunch of hospitals. And he also told himself, and he got a customer to agree to buy some gloves. And he also told himself, it's not too late for me to start this. And then he started scaling. Like then he gave up equity in his company to people who owned hospital chains. He told me everybody in who's his partner is worth over $100 million. He's worth zero. But because they're worth over $100 million, for them to put together a $100 million deal where they're each going to make between 10 and 20 million, it's not that big a deal for them. And they don't even care if this deal gets done. Of course he does. It's going to change his life. He's going to make, it's the specific number. He's going to make $19.8 million next week because the deal's done. And, so it's just an exciting, you met him once actually. He came to my comedy event in Chicago, right before the pandemic. So he was so far from this. He was like scared to death about money and now done deal for him. Yeah. So,
That's so great.
It's important lessons that execution, there's a spectrum of execution. There's hard execution and easy execution. Make your execution easy. Can you outsource to a factory? You don't have to make it yourself. Do you have a friend who has a friend who runs a hospital? Do I have a friend who has a friend who's a software engineer? Well, how am I going to distribute this once it's done? Okay, I have another friend of a friend who might be an influencer of some sort that is willing to get excited about this. Who knows? I'll figure it out when the time comes. So all of these things have lessons.
And I think it's important too. You know, when I started my company, I did give, I mean, I kept 51% of it, but I did sell 49% to other people that had other abilities than I did. And it's worth giving your equity away to people that can add value to your company. So I always say it's better to have, you know, 10% of something rather than 100% of nothing.
Yeah, every investment decision I've ever made was when I heard about a great idea, what I thought was a great idea, and I looked around and I said, don't tell anybody about this. I'll buy a third of this company. And all of those deals failed. All those investments failed. Like, you want to be able to this is all the other lesson in my friend's story, which you also just expressed, is that you're going to be, it really is true. It's a cliche, but it really is true. You're the average of the five people you spend your time with. So, for instance, if all of your friends are billionaires and you say, hey, I have a business idea, they're all be like, great, here's $10 million from each of us, start your business. As opposed to if all of your friends are, you know, hanging out in a bar, they're going to say, well, good luck with your idea. Can I have another drink? I was thinking about this when I was interviewing Mike Massimino, who was an astronaut who fixed the Hubble Space Telescope in space. One time, he couldn't get into NASA, and he kept failing the NASA test. And so he decided to get a PhD at MIT instead. And he said, I'm not the smartest guy, but I got a PhD. I was going for a PhD on how to build robots that work on Mars. And he looked around and then he was later thinking, one of the classes he was in, 9 out of 10 people in the class ended up in space. And it made me think, if he was at a bar, he wouldn't be able to say that. It would never be the case that 9 out of 10 people at this bar will end up in outer space. But he was at, you know, this class in MIT on building robots on Mars. 9 out of 10 of those students got PhDs and ended up being astronauts. And so it's really true. Constantly upgrade, not upgrade because your friends are not bad, but constantly, if you want to make money, be around good, honest people who know how to make money. If you want to be better at chess, hang out with good chess players. If you want to be better at cooking, hang out with good chefs and do the plus minus equals technique I describe in my book, where a plus is a virtual mentor or a real mentor. The equals are the people you're growing up with and striving with, and you exchange ideas. That would be the equivalent of the guys and the people who are in this guy's class. And minus are people to teach. You can't, if you can't explain something easily, then you don't really understand it. I learned lately, I've been using the skip the line techniques to get better than I ever was at chess. And already, it took me a few months, but I would say right now I'm at the level I was in 1997, which was when I was at my peak. I lost a lot of abilities after that because I stopped playing, but now I'm probably where I was, and now my goal is to get much better. And the first thing I did was I got my plus minus equals. I got a coach. Thank you to Eric Rosen, who's been coaching me in chess. I got a bunch of equals. I play a little bit every day, and I got myself several minuses, although they think it's funny that they're called minuses, but I learned even more from teaching chess than being taught chess, because I understand the basics at a nuanced level even greater than I did before. It's really a fascinating process. And that's the first technique I use. Then I use the micro skills techniques and the experimental techniques and so on. And it's been great. But questions?
About the non-fungible tokens.
Yo, yeah, so non-fungible tokens, I do want to talk about it. That's worth an entire episode just by itself. So stay tuned next week, and I'll do an entire episode just about... So non-fungible tokens are this way of using crypto combined with selling art. It's like the idea sex between Bitcoin and art collection. And so I think it's fascinating. We're going to talk about that. And, someone says do a masterclass on chess. Well, my good friend Garry Kasparov actually is doing a masterclass on chess. And I was thinking of taking it, actually. But maybe that's a good idea, because I sort of see there's no, from the point of view of someone who's a beginner, this is a very important concept, actually, for business also. From the point of view of a consumer, or the point of view of a beginner at a sport or a game or a science or business, you can't tell the difference between a product that's 10 or 20 or 50% better than another product. Like, we all remember Betamax and VHS were two ways of storing videos. Betamax was clearly better than VHS, but VHS won because nobody could tell the difference. The average person couldn't tell the difference in quality. No one who's a beginner can tell the difference in chess, for instance, between me and someone stronger than me, but I may or may not be a better teacher. And so with business, and here's another example, and this is an example that happened with our daughter, and I think it's a really great example. So our daughter was, like every kid, is applying to colleges, you know, and also like every kid or many kids, she has good grades, she has good SAT scores, she's been in lots of clubs, she's a perfect student. But that's not good enough. It's not good enough to be 10% better than all the other students. It doesn't mean you're going to get into any colleges at all, because nobody could tell. Nobody could tell 10% better. I want to keep track of this question. Gotcha. So no one could tell the difference between a student who's 10% better. Okay, this one's got better grades. This one maybe has better after-school activities. So we decided, and she was on board with this, let's take a year and do things that are not make her not just better, but the only. It's better to be the only than the better. And so we just got back from a weekend of giving her, we signed her up for race car driving lessons. So we went to this race car driving school, and she did a bunch of lessons, and she got her,
this is the second time,
so it's like over a period of lessons. And she got her race car driving license, and she's participated in a professional race. And were there money awards at the end of that race?
No.
All right, so it wasn't quite professional, but she could.
Right. But she got second, so that's good.
She got second in the race. And so now that's something. How many kids with A-minus averages or A averages, with good SAT scores, with the same clubs everyone else's? Oh, by the way, also, she came in second in her first real race, and she has a race car driving license. Always, instead of trying to be the better, be the only. And this is really the important lesson from Skip the Line. You don't need to be the best in the world to monetize something. You do need to have the basic skills. You do need to be in the top 1% in the world. By virtue of the fact that she has a race car driving license, she's in the top 1% of drivers in the world now. And she's also participated in an actual race, and she'll do more. But by being the only, you stand out. When I was in high, now, I don't even think kids should go to college, but that's another story. I also am willing to say I don't know, and I won't be firm about it. But when I was applying for college, I had horrible grades in high school. I was like number 163rd in my class. I was constantly, I was constantly suspended. I had okay SAT scores, not the best. I had good math, but not good verbal. I didn't have any after school activities. So here's what I did. I started playing chess actually, and I became New Jersey's high school chess champion. I was also New Jersey's junior chess champion, and I was one of the top ranked people in my age group in the country. And so instead of being trying to be a better student, I was the only person who, I mean, I was the best person in New Jersey applying for colleges. So I remember when I went for my college interview, one of my college interviews, the guy was actually, I had interrupted his studying of a game that I was familiar with. He was studying the match Bobby Fischer versus Mark Tymon of 1971. I happened to know the game very well. So instead of talking about, oh, well, what classes do you like, blah, 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 I was able to help him out and almost give him my interviewer for college a mini chess lesson. The same thing happened when I applied to a job, when I applied to graduate school, when I raised money for a hedge fund, when I sold a business. Things like chess or other areas where I excelled, where I was the only, really made me stand out. And that helped me a lot rather than, you know, it doesn't matter if someone's a grandmaster at chess or a master at chess. No one knows the difference. The other billion people don't know the difference. And so it's one's just as good as another. Even though I know the grandmaster could be the master, me, you know, 9 times out of 10, no one else knows that and doesn't even care. So this is an important lesson, and it's a practical lesson. Like, our daughter is using this lesson, the idea of it's better to be the only than the better. She's using this idea to actually change her life and get into a better college, and it's working. So we know it's working. We've seen this work. We know it's working. It's worked for me. It's worked for Robin. So don't think you have to go the straight and narrow path and just be better every step of the way. You have to figure out how you can have your own unique voice and be the only. Now, there is a question that I will get to, which is the stock market's up 50% since a year ago today. I mean, a year ago today was the bottom of the stock market, and it started zooming up. So we're celebrating the year anniversary of the stock market hitting bottom and then going straight up. It's up 50% in the past year. Is it going to continue? This is an important economics lesson right now. The answer is, I don't know, because that's the correct answer for everything you ask. But here's what's important to know. I'm going to use an example from poker. When you're playing poker, where should you sit at the table? I'll give you a second to think about it. When you're playing poker, there's 10 people. Where should you sit? You should sit immediately to the left of the worst poker player at the table. So the poker, the betting goes clockwise. So if you sit, let's say Robin, who probably would be a good poker player, but she doesn't know how to play. Let's say Robin was the weakest player at the table. You're not the weakest player if I teach you, but let's just say you were the weakest player at the table. If I sit to her left, every time she bets, I know she doesn't know if she's the weakest player. I know she doesn't really know how to bluff. I know she doesn't know how to calculate the odds of each hand. I know she's going to make a lot of mistakes. So my ideal scenario is for Robin and I to be the only ones left for every single hand. So she's going to bet, and I'm always going to raise if I have any kind of hand at all. The person, the D. Castros is right, next to the weak player. So every time she bets, I'm going to raise. That will scare out all the other people who have to bet. So now she and I are left at the table. Well, I'll explain what this has to do with the stock market in a second. So what does that mean? It means she's going to make more mistakes. Sometimes she's going to have a great hand and win. I'm not always going to take her money. But in general, money flows clockwise. So the weak player will be isolated by the strong player. This is an important poker lesson. The weak player will be isolated by the strong player because I'll always raise her and re-raise her. Everybody will be scared, and so they'll all get out, and we're left, and I'm going to outplay her, and maybe 4 times out of 7, I'll win the hand. Not every time, but enough that I'm going to make good money. And when I sense she has a good hand, I'll get out. When I sense she's bluffing, I'll stay in. When I know I have good statistics, I'll stay in. I have more abilities to win a hand than she does. There's a luck component as well. I'll get out when I think she has a good hand. But in general, my skills will be greater. So money will flow from any money she has will flow to me. Now, oh, somebody's taking motorcycle lessons on the street here. So the money will flow from the weak players to the strong players, particularly if I'm right next to her. What does this have to do with the stock market? So in the stock market, the weakest player at the table is the U.S., it is the average person in the U.S. economy. The strongest player at the table is the stock market. So the Congress just passed a $1.9 trillion stimulus package. And everyone's arguing, well, don't bail out these people. It does not matter. Everybody being bailed out is just by definition the weakest players at the table. That's why they're being bailed out. Now, I'm not saying anything about their skill. This is just the metaphor. So the $1.9 trillion is being handed to the weakest player at the poker table. The stock market is the strongest player at the poker table. So no matter where the money goes, the stock market's going to raise and raise and raise and isolate itself with the weakest player. The metaphor doesn't quite work all the way, but trust that the larger the stimulus package, all of that money is going to be put eventually, not day one, not day two, not day three, but all that money is eventually going to be put into the stock market. So let's say the guy who owns the newspaper stand was bailed out and got a $1,400 check. That's great. Now he pays some bills. Now he buys flowers for his wife and he buys something at the deli. So now the flower store guy, he just got the newspaper guy's money. So the newspaper guy got a dollar. Now the flower guy got the same dollar from the newspaper guy. Now the flower guy takes that dollar, goes across the street to Starbucks, buys a coffee or 1/10 of a coffee, whatever a Starbucks coffee costs. And now Starbucks, the guy gets a tip. That guy has the dollar. Now that guy goes and he buys a McDonald's hamburger and whatever. So the money circulates around the economy and eventually the money ends up in a bank. The bank puts the money in an ETF or, you know, a stock market fund. And the money always ends up in the stock market, which is why there's a saying, don't fight the Fed. Now, you can argue, was the stimulus package good for the economy? Will there be inflation? Will there be deflation? I can tell you, so many people seem really convinced there's going to be inflation. There's going to be deflation. The economy's going to be ruined. The market's scheduled to sell off on April 30th. You know, there's all these people with opinions. But I can tell you, having spoken to them, the people at the Federal Reserve are some of the smartest people on the planet. They think there's deflation. But there are economists who are among the smartest people on the planet who think there's inflation. So the correct answer is, I don't know. But one thing we all know is the stock market is, in this example, the strongest player at the poker table. The stock market will go up. Shitty companies will go higher because all this money is going to flow into the stock market. Crypto is going to go up because all the money is going to flow into the crypto is the alternative to the stock market. And that's just a fact of money. That's why there's a saying, don't fight the Fed. That's why you always sit next to the left of the weakest player. So the more bailouts there are, and by the way, what happens if there's inflation? No problem. People don't realize this. The stock market is the best hedge against inflation. Not gold, which is just a rock and can't be used for anything, but the stock market, because the stock market is shares and they're priced in dollars or they're priced in euros or they're priced in crypto. If the value of the dollar goes down, the value of the stocks go up. So stock market is the hedge against inflation. And you think about stimulus as a giant poker game. The more money in the long term, we'll deal with inflation or deflation or whatever. But in the short term, which means 6 to 18 months, the stock market is eventually going to win the poker game and get all the money from the weak players. The weak players are the ones being bailed out. So if you like this IG Live, first off, we're going to put this on YouTube. I hope Jay's here. We're going to put this on YouTube. We're going to also, you know what? I forgot to record this. So it's not going to be in my live unless Jay can help me with that. And we're going to put this on YouTube. We're going to make a podcast out of this so you can listen to this on the podcast. I'm sorry we didn't answer as many questions. I'll come up with a better way of communicating to answer questions next time. We just told some stories and some life lessons.
Maybe they can send them to Jay.
And Jay, also, collect the questions so that next time we can just answer questions. Yeah. So, by the way, I'm going to, you know, Bitcoin is the new tulip mania. I'm going to talk about tulips because tulips are not as much a bubble as people think. And I'm going to give a lesson on what's actually a bubble in the stock market and how do you avoid it. So Jay, can you put this video on my IG Live and put it on YouTube and we'll make it into a podcast that we'll release in the next day or so. We told some good stories. I think the important lesson for me, because I just heard this story yesterday, is that it's never too late to start a business in an area you're totally unqualified to do. Another important lesson is better to be the only than the better. And another lesson is, if you want to execute, it's your friends of your friends that are the best places to go to execute on any idea. Thanks so much, Lisa. I always enjoy when you're on here. Thanks so much to everybody else for joining us. If you like this IG Live, maybe comment somewhere on Twitter or review it on the podcast, on Apple Podcasts, because that really helps me to know to keep doing this. Thanks a lot, Max. And Max, I hope you're getting better from COVID. I meant to respond to you. I'm sorry I didn't respond, but I hope you're feeling better. And comment on Apple Podcasts because that helps us a lot. And share this with your friends if you think there's a lesson in here that's useful for them. And in general, I like to know that, you know, we stopped doing these IG Lives for a while and we really miss them and we really miss talking to people. I know Robin did and I did, and we miss doing this together. This is good for us. So if you like this, let us know so that we'll keep doing it. Thanks very much, everybody. Bye.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.